Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of our listeners all over the world. I'm Barry Muller, your host for the RevAmp podcast. Today, I have the privilege to have John Seaton, CRO of Sendyne, with us today as our guest. We're going to go a lot into everything, but we're going to specifically focus on the industry around us, the effects of what is happening around us, how that affects our sales teams, how it affects other teams, and how to continue to make our employees happy. So not only that they'll stay with us, but that they'll be happy with us. So John, tell us a bit more about yourself. I got the privilege to speak to you for a few minutes before we started the podcast, but tell our listeners a bit about more of yourself. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. And thanks for this opportunity. So, as Barry said, my name is John Seaton. I'm CRO at Sendyne. I've been with Sendyne for just over 6 years, and I've been in the CRO role about 2 years. In fact, I joined September 19 into this role, and obviously then March 2020, the world went into a little bit of chaos. And I'll talk about that from a hospitality perspective. Just Sendyne generally, for those who don't know, We're a software company. We provide software to the hospitality industry. And it's something we've done for 20 plus years. My background, I've been in the industry 25 years. And before that, I actually came from being a professional tennis coach. And then I made that jump, that leap from the sporting world to business. And as I said to you earlier, Barry, it's not a huge amount of difference in many ways. And so going from that coach into the business world, I've always enjoyed the sort of the coaching element of what I do. And even when I was an individual sales contributor, and I learned out from a junior sales manager, right, and then obviously well up to where I am today. So I've followed the sales, career progress. And I think every element of it is always, I've always had that piece of, leading, trying to coach, trying to mentor. And I thoroughly enjoy that. And I think that's why I enjoy what I do right now at Sendyne.
That's awesome. Hopefully sweat a little bit less inside while coaching.
Yeah, it's funny. I haven't picked a tennis racket up for a few years. I did it for so many hours a day, 7 days a week. I then gave it up, and I actually took up golf because I thought I've never played golf, and I wanted to learn something new. And I like the challenge of learning something new that I can't do. And so I put the racket down and took up golf. And a number of years later, I'm still incredibly useless at golf. It was fun. Tennis is fun. It's a great game, in fact. Here we are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, to my understanding, your path to CRO started from that coaching philosophy of a tennis coach, but you're mostly on the sales path. Is that correct?
Yeah, totally. Ironically, I was going to join the police, and I did my police exams in London, and right at the last minute, I was going to go and do my physical for the police, and I saw this job advert in the local paper. This is before the internet, right? So this is when we still read newspapers, physical newspapers, and I saw this job advert in Travel, and I read this, and I remember saying to my parents, oh my God, this sounds like fun, and so I applied for it. And I'm very lucky I got the job. But that was actually in customer service. So I actually started, rather than selling something, I was in the customer service, trying to manage hotels and guests of hotels. And then I'd gone from there. And then from customer service, I then thought, wow, I quite enjoy this. I quite enjoy the salesy piece of it. And so I sort of went into it as a junior salesperson. And then my career just went through sales. From there, I never left sales. And that's the thing with sales, right? Once it's hooking you, I don't think you could ever get out of it. You know, people describe me, those who know me well, they just know I'm a salesman through and through. I think it's in my DNA, actually. But I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that definitely, I'm sure that passion of sales love helps also the people that work with you to see and feed off that passion, like in sports, kind of in that sense.
Yeah, it does, you know, because it's on the passion side of things. You're right. If you enjoy what you do, it's much easier to do it well. And so if you have that motivation to you know, and you wake up in the morning, you want to go and do whatever it is you do. I'm a strong believer that you will do it much better if you enjoy it. And that's really, you know, regardless of probably every role I've had, I've always really thrown myself into it and I've really enjoyed it. And I think I've had some pretty decent success here. I'm a decent commission when I was a sales rep. I wouldn't say I was motivated by money, but you know, commission does help a salesperson. It is what we do and how we earn. So yeah, I've always really been motivated because I've enjoyed what I do, and you know, my teams now. I always say that, you know, to the team. I speak to my team. I try and speak to my team as regularly as I can, and I say to them, you know, have a laugh, enjoy what you do. Okay, it's business. There's a serious element to what we do, and we have you know, the board of directors that we have to you know, keep happy and the management. But enjoy what you do and have fun as well. You know, that is important. And I just feel sometimes people forget that fun element of the roles that we all do. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's now go into, I guess, our topic, if you will, about the hospitality industry, without, I guess, going too much into COVID, because, you know, you don't have to work in the hospitality industry to understand that COVID impacted the hospitality industry.
Yeah.
But maybe you could talk to us about how that's affecting your sales team, how it's affecting the sales cycle.
No, it's yeah. I won't dwell too much on COVID. I think we've all lived it far too long. You know, for the hospitality industry and travel industry in general, obviously, something like a pandemic, it crucifies our industry. You know, people stop traveling, people stop staying in hotels. You know, and the impact on all the industries and companies that support an industry then are impacted by that. And you know, the hospitality industry, it's a very resilient industry, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's a pandemic or an act of terrorism somewhere in the world or when we had remember the volcano and the dust and that grounded planes for a period of time. So we as an industry, well, we're impacted by a lot of things, macro things outside of our control that affect our industry. And over the years, we've become very resilient to some of those affecting us. And I think COVID and the pandemic, we'll look back on it and say, yeah, we had a really tough time, and we have had a very tough time. You know, I know some very, very skilled and talented individuals in our industry and hoteliers who are out of work, you know, that had to go on furlough. And that's tough. But we'll bounce back, and we've already seen a bounce back. You know, America, for example, opened up a lot quicker than some of the other markets around the world. We know Vegas, for example, which is a key market for Sendine, they bounced back incredibly strong. You know, their room occupancy was nearly 100%, if not 100%, down the whole strip. So We've seen the market bounce back in certain territories. What we really need is for the globally to bounce back and open up. And the challenge is, I don't know, Barry, if you've traveled yourself in recent times, but some of those restrictions that you have when you're trying to travel, it does put people off. What COVID test do I need? What passenger locator form? Where do I fill it in? And it's adding complication to, you know, something that traveling is supposed to be fun. So if you're going on vacation or whatever, do you need all that hassle? And you know, in the UK, I'm lucky I live on the south coast of the UK, and it is a relatively touristy destination, and in fact we did very well because obviously people didn't go abroad. So there are pockets where there are some nice success stories, both if that's the right term, as a result of this. But we really do need to get out there, and the challenge the industry faces, which I know we're going to talk about people and you know, resignation and stuff like that. But you know what that's done is, it's actually, first of all, a lot of people working from home, and so they've changed the mindset of, I have to go to an office every day. You know, Stendine hasn't opened up its offices again. We use some of our offices around the world for like meetings, space and stuff like that, and we obviously take the precautions of making sure everyone's tested and vaccinated and everything else. But you know, just the whole working culture of working from home versus going to the office. Yeah, I've worked from home for probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years, whatever it is, a long time. I'm used to it. I'm set up with that, and here I am in my home office. So, but it takes a different type of discipline to work from home to working in an office. And I think the negative side of working from home, as an example, is people are missed out on that interaction with their colleagues, having the coffee. You know, going down at lunchtime, saying to a colleague at another desk, fancy grabbing a sandwich. And I think we as a just everyone in corporate life probably didn't appreciate how important that plays into someone's role when they go to work every day. And you know, and I think now what's happened is a lot of the industries, especially the hospitality, and I think we were impacted probably slightly worse than many of the others, are that people have gone, do you know what? I'm going to use this opportunity to take a look at my life, look at where I live, look and think, do I need to make a change? In the UK, there was an interesting article about how many people used the pandemic to make a decision about moving out of cities like London, Manchester, and moving to the countryside, just to get a better quality of life, be able to walk your dog if you have a dog, you know, that type of thing. And that becomes, I think, much more important to people now than it previously did. And I think, so people are now using this opportunity, this change in our lives, to make quite big decisions about what they want to do and how they want to get motivated in the morning and go to work. That's left our industry with a resource shortage, with employee shortage. And you know, just I was talking to a hotelier, and I won't mention a name, protect their innocence, but they were saying, we could fill our hotel 100%, but we can't, because we can't open certain floors of the hotel because we don't have the housekeeping staff to do the change of the rooms. And they went, we can't hire people quick enough. And we've had a similar situation. I hired a salesperson in the US, and we'd sent the person a laptop and everything. And literally 24 hours before the person was starting, they got a better offer of like $70,000 more base salary than we were paying. And you know, and good luck to that individual, you know, and I hope they go on to be very, very successful. But that, you can't compete with that. That's a difficult situation to try and handle, because, you know, well, if for them to get a 70,000 base more, what are they going to sell? What, how much do they have to sell to get the ROI, for the company to get the ROI? And so I think we as an industry certainly need to keep an eye out on that, because I don't want the bubble to burst and then there'll be anything like recession or anything else that may or may not happen as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So from what I'm hearing, it seems like, one, there's a supply and demand side, not just on sales staff, but also on hospitality industry, which affects Stendine, obviously, because that's who you're selling to. So I think that's also interesting to talk about those headwinds of the market that you're in also matters, because if they're impacted, then you're impacted as a sales leader, which makes sense. But it's still interesting to think that this great resignation isn't just affecting you, it's affecting your customers. So that's interesting point number one. So interesting, or there are many different interesting points, but the other thing I wanted to discuss is you mentioned that money is definitely a factor for people leaving. If money is a factor for people leaving, I'm sure that's also a factor for people that work at Sendine or other people that are looking to recruit. So what is it that you can, besides for offering more like a higher salary, what is it that you can actually do differently to retain and to keep those employees and also to recruit some sales reps?
Yeah, it's a good question. Money is important, obviously, pay bills. And anybody that really tells you anything different respect to them. But most people do have mortgages and have bills to pay. And so, and in the UK, we've got the energy price crisis going on where, energy is going to go up significantly. Now and that hurts people, and so money does become an important thing. What we did, we've done at Sendine, and we're still going through this. So it's nowhere near complete, Barry. But we've actually using something called Culpepper to help us, an external report to help us benchmark every single person in the company against. Similar roles in other industries and whatever, so that we can actually look at what we pay our team, not just sales team, every single employee. We look at what they're being paid, what are they against the market, so that we can then make informed decisions as a leadership team about how do we address some of the big outliers where someone is clearly underpaid. We've also looked at the organization, and we think about all of us in our own respective areas, look at who's absolutely critical. Every employee is important, don't misunderstand me, but who are those absolute critical people that we must look after, because they do an outstanding job. They're clearly underpaid. And so how do we address them in the immediate term? So there's a number of activities or initiatives that the senior leadership team at Sendine are looking at in order to, balance better and be more fair to our employees at Sendine. That's not to say everyone's just going to get a massive pay rise, because that's not reality either. But it's to provide that fairness. The other thing, Barry, that we've done, and first of all, we hired a chief HR officer, and that's something, that was a role we never had at Sendine before, and it was, HR was something we all sort of had an element of that within our roles, but we invested in hiring a chief HR officer to really help us, focus on how we can address the challenges our staff are making. And already, Jenny has made significant positive impact on the business. And, looking at, we're a global company and we're not massive. I think we've actually just done an M&A, but before that, I think we're about 350 people, and we go up to about 500 and so people. But it's like, what can we do to really help our employees in across the globe? And so one of the initiatives we've done is we've looked at the benefits of everybody. Obviously in America, benefits like 401k and stuff is very different to how we are in Europe, for example, when relating to pension. But one thing we identified was actually we've moved to an unlimited holiday allowance, PTO allowance. And a few people I've said that to have said, whoa, what do you mean unlimited? Even my brothers who are both in corporate life were like, really, you get unlimited? And the reality is, we've done a lot of research, and really what that's doing is it's shifting responsibility for your work-life balance back to the employee. Saying to that employee, do you know what? We're not going to be the ones that stop you from getting that right balance for you. Yes, there is an absolute need for you to meet your objectives. and I'll touch on performance objectives in a second, if I may. But they're absolutely, but you take responsibility. You're accountable for what you do. So you know what? If you need to go and take, you know, a few days off, go and take some days off. We're not gonna judge you. We're not gonna criticize you. None of that. Now there are some caveats around that. Some rules. You can't just decide, I know, I live in the south of France, I'm going to go and take 2 months off in July, August. It doesn't quite work like that. But you have that flexibility, Barry, of making your own decisions. And you know what? If you need to spend time with your family, go do it, because that's really, really important. And if you look after that balance, you're going to be so much more productive when you are working at your desk or in the meetings or whatever it may be. That's just one example of what we've implemented for 2022, the feedback I've had so far from those that I talked to has been nothing but positive. But it's a shift in mindset. I was chatting to one of the colleagues in Europe, and he was like, "But I get 30 days today. That's my allowance." Yeah. So do I still get 30 days? We get 30 days plus whatever else you want. Now, there are minimum amounts of days you can take in the that based on your legal requirements in that country. We're not going to take what you... But what happens if you take 32 days or 33? Would that help? Oh. And so it's that shift in mindset from, I've got to be protecting my 30 days to, so actually, you are empowering me. You are, and that's the key bit about employee retention stuff. It's empowering people to make decisions for themselves, to be accountable to themselves, and stuff like that. Feel free to ask a question, but there's a book that we read, Patrick Lencioni's The Five Behaviors, The Dysfunctions of a Team, and we're all about that, and it's all about that. Having that level of trust, and then when you trust each other, you can then have healthy conflict, and then you can have commitment, accountability, and results. I don't know if you've read that, but we adhere to that religiously as a leadership team within Zendine, and that really comes down to we trust our staff, we trust each other to do what we say we're going to do. When we say we're going to do it, and it's built from that, then it allows you to be more flexible with your teams and with the organisation to I suppose create a better working environment.
That's amazing. That's a lot of stuff. A lot of interesting. What was I'm so appreciative. I would have interrupted if I needed to, but it was all gold. So thank you. What was the name of the book again?
It's the Patrick Lencioni. It's the Five Dysfunctions. Oh, you can't see it because of the camera. It's called The Five Dysfunctions of the Team. Patrick Lencioni. He writes a few good books, and it's just something that we bought into as a leadership team, and you know we bought that into that at the senior leadership team level. That we become the first team. I think Jamie talked about that in a previous podcast you did, where he talked about, when he became CRO, he's now in that team, even and maybe not necessarily the sales team, because the sales team is actually different. And it's that concept of your first team who is your first team. And it's an interesting read. But, you know, it changes you in how you trust people and you build that trust. And you obviously have elements of vulnerability and stuff like that. And so it's you know, we research our, you know, we're always surveying our employees to get feedback. How are we doing? Because unfortunately through COVID we had to make layoffs. We acted quick, we sat down. It's probably, I think, the most stressful time in my career for sure. having those tough conversations with someone saying, I'm sorry, but we're going to need to lay you off, or we need to put you on furlough. I'm going to be honest, I had to Google what furlough meant. I didn't even know what furlough was at the start of COVID. But, you know, you're having those conversations with people, and it's incredibly tough. And but you have belief and you have trust in each other that we're doing it for the right reasons and we deliver it in the right way. You know, we obviously compensated people as best as we could, rather than stick to the traditional rules of redundancy or whatever it is. So we always took the high sort of line and saying, no, actually we're going to try and look after, even if we're letting someone go, let's try and look after them as best as we possibly can to help them through what would be a challenging time. The other thing, if I may, when we talk about the employees and really trying to prevent resignations, and we're not, I wouldn't say we're perfect. We've got our own fair share of people who are leaving for new challenges in life. But you know, one of the things that I believe is people need to know what the direction is, what the vision is. Because if you can believe in that, then you're more likely to buy into it and stick with it. And so something that, you know, from a Sendine perspective, and we've been through quite a significant amount of M&A activity. We've done acquisitions, we've done 2 mergers. We've probably got some more that we want to do over the next year or two. Is there's a lot of change. And with a lot of change, you know, is that uncertainty. What happens is with change is you have that moment of change and then it goes down. You have that uncertainty. And really, it's then people, your human nature is you then rebound back up. And it's that, it's trying to limit the impact of that change and bring someone back up to feeling comfortable with the change as quickly as humanly possible. So one of the ways we did this, and I think if I recall correctly, it was something that Amazon did right from day one, is we actually created what we call the Sendine flywheel. And that is across the organization, we as a collective group, not just as senior leadership, we involved other people from across the organization. We sat and spent a lot of time talking about who we are, what we want to be, and so that everybody knew in their area what's important for them in order and what they're contributing to the Sendine flywheel. And in the middle of the flywheel is Team Sendine, is the growth of the company. And then you have the build, deliver world-class product, implement solutions quicker, grow profitable revenue globally, you know, improve customer experience and customer retention. So everybody knows what their part is of that flywheel. And the idea of the wheel is everybody does their bit, the wheel keeps turning. And it keeps turning, then you have the Team Sendine in the middle. And so we present that pretty much every single time we have a company all hands call. Or, you know, I've got my the commercial call this afternoon with my whole organization. And that slide will be one of the first slides I show. And I reiterate, this is how we, as a sales team, as a commercial organization, this is our element of how we participate in the Sendine flywheel. But we just keep repeating that, and it's communicate. You can't over communicate, and it's that being able to tell everybody how they fit into it. That is, the idea is to get everyone to buy into it, as I said before, and then, you know how they are contributing to that. And I think that's quite motivating personally. As I said right at the very start, you have to be motivated to do what. To be successful in whatever you choose to do. And I think it's about that, I think. If that makes any sense.
We'll make it 3 T's: transparency, trust, and maybe teamwork we could go with.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. We should lock that down. We could make fortunes on royalties.
All right, deal. There's a few questions I have, and then I'm going to move to a new topic. So one, there's, I guess, like, the pay that the finding your leaders, hiring the HR, the chief of HR, would that have happened if the Great Resignation wasn't going on, in your opinion?
Not sure I understand. So are you saying
I'm trying to understand if it's, and again, you don't have to answer it because it is like a personal to send on, but was it the inflection of understanding that there's a huge demand for sales teams for all your employees, that they that there's a lot of opportunity at other companies? Did that shift you to make these decisions to give the like unlimited PTO? Or was it, or do you think that would have happened if, even if everything was standard and everything kept on going? Because, you know, that's just an initiative as a company. You always continue to try to be better for your employees.
That's a good question. I don't know if I necessarily know the answer to that question. I think I'd like to say these things would have happened anyway. The reality is, I don't know if they would have happened as quick as we implemented them. Obviously, we like anyone else, we react to market conditions, we react to the challenges we face as a business, and you know, the sales, the senior leadership team. So we meet twice weekly, for an hour and a half each time, where we just focus on the challenges, and not just that, but the challenges, the opportunities. You know, and when we look at, we have a strict agenda for these leadership meetings, and number one item on it is people. You know, it's right up there, top of the agenda. And so because we identify that the people is what makes us who we are, and we have to do everything in our power to look after the people, and as I said before, empower the people and motivate the people and drive success. So I don't know if we would have done it or not. To be honest with you, you know, we were acquired outright by Accel KKR not very long before the pandemic hit. So so we didn't really have much of an opportunity to work out what we wanted to be as a leadership team before we were thrust into one of the biggest challenges the industry's ever faced. You know, so, you know, I'll give you an example, right? Brad, who's our CTO, I still never met him in person. And we've worked together for now 2 years. I've never met him because I'm in the UK. He's based in Florida. We haven't had the opportunity because of COVID and everything else. I couldn't travel. And so we've had to build up that working relationship, that working trust between us, completely via video conference. And I'm just talking about us. You know, that happens across every level of the organization. So we've got, you know, salespeople who and sales engineers who have never met, yet they rely on each other to be successful. And that's a challenge that I don't think it's unique to Sendai. I think everyone faces that challenge. But you know, it's a different way of working, and we have to adapt and figure it out. But it is difficult. You know, sometimes I messaged a hotel company in Dubai, a large hotel company, and said, I'd love to come to Dubai and meet you. We'll have to meet outside the office because we can't have any visitors to the office because of COVID, right? Well, that's again. Well, how do I come with your key account director to do a quarterly business review if I can't come in and present? And so we have to think outside the box. And you know, we talk about motivation for the sales. I've talked quite a lot about generally about people, but just think about from a sales perspective. You know, we're about, you know, convincing someone to buy something, right? And that's what we do. And so, you know, so we have to do that in a different way to how we did it before. Because we'd normally go in, we'd pitch, we'd present, we'd have the PowerPoint, blah, blah, blah. We can read body language and all that sort of lovely stuff. But you can't do that in necessarily as well in a video type environment. And so I know some of my sales team have really struggled with that. You know, one of them often said, but I'm about reading body language when I'm pitching, right? I know how to, you know, what to change in the pitch based on the room, what's happening in the room. And I get that. I totally get that. But obviously, when you're on a Zoom call and you've got, you know, 10, 15 people dialing in, you lose that ability. And so from a sales perspective, it becomes that much harder. And so it's a challenge for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to touch on one base. I actually, that thing that you mentioned before asking my follow-up question, I think it's very interesting that you don't know the answer to see if the Great Resignation caused this. And I think that's actually healthy from a company standpoint, in the sense that you want to increase the love to your employees and to be helpful to the employees. And I also think, and why I think that's also very interesting, is that I'm sure the employees also don't realize it, that they've shifted. Everyone's been shifted by their surroundings. And people, yeah. some people are calling it a reset. Some people like looked at life and stopped, but some people didn't stop, but their mind maybe switched, or their thoughts have changed, and they haven't even recognized that actually this has changed. So I wonder, and they haven't communicated that change. So I wonder, just something interesting, I think, from a psychological perspective, that it's not just the employer, it's also the employees who might not know the differences. So I just had to mention that. With regards to your sales team, you mentioned now they have to sell differently. Or are there any, I guess, technologies that have helped increase, and you don't have to specific list any specific technologies, but are there any technologies, has that helped retain employees? Has that helped?
So absolutely, just take DealHub, right? Take a CPQ tool, for example. One of the things that I did, I introduced a department within the sales and commercial organization called Commercial Ops. It was something we didn't really have before, but it was something I think is absolutely critical to the sales success. Is by having this commercial operations team. And, as part of that, we use Salesforce CRM, we implemented DealHub as a CPQ tool. The reason why I was a strong believer having a CPQ tool was because I needed to streamline the sales process. We believe in the MEDPIC method, sales methodology. That's what we train our sales team on. We spend a significant amount of money on external training around MEDPIC, right? And within, are you familiar with MEDIC and MEDPIC?
I am, but you can explain it to our listeners.
So for everybody else, maybe not familiar, it's really when you're looking at an opportunity, you look at it from the metrics. So it's MEDPIC is the acronym, and it's metrics, economic buyer, decision criteria. Then you've got the P represents the paper process, which I want to touch on in a second. I is the identified pain. C is competition, and the other C is champion. One D was decision process. So that's the MEDPIC. Within that, the P, for example, the paper process, that's a frustrating area for sales, because you can work the opportunity, and then you get to the bit where it's a contracting piece. And yes, you've got the verbal, I want to buy your product, John. Great. Now you've got to do the whole lengthy contract. And so I was very motivated to try and streamline that process as much as I possibly can. And, with the help of Emma and her team, who's my head of commercial ops, we rolled out DealHub. We put our contracts in there. We use the deal room functionality. We have our MSA and data processing agreements online through a link. And so what that did was, and there was some skepticism from some sales team, I won't lie, but what that did was that took what was a very lengthy legal process with customers, and it's starting to bring it down. It's not perfect, I won't be on it, I won't lie, but it's bringing that time down as we spend on the legal process. What that does from a sales motivating perspective is, well, it means you can get deals to close quicker, which means I can get my commission quicker and I can move on to the next deal. And it's the adrenaline, you know, of winning deals, which is what I want the salespeople to experience, right? So that was a major, major milestone for us to roll out the CPQ tool. You know, the other thing we wanted to do was, you know, is simplify pricing. You know, and again, you know, you can do that when you've got the technology in place between the CRM and CPQ. You can start to make life easier to price an opportunity, because you think, okay, at the moment, COVID, hotels don't have the luxury of having loads of money in the bank. They can just go and pay like a big check for a configuration or one-time fees. So we think about that. We thought, okay, how do we change that? And how do we make it easier for a hotel to buy our technology? Well, let's get rid of configuration fee, those big one-time fees, and let's move to a true SaaS type pricing, you know, which is a subscription model, and just make life easier. Well, you can do that. You can implement that when you've got the right technology in place to help you automate the processes that you're trying to introduce. So I think they're probably, that's the big area that we focused on. So the medic training for sales, and then implementing the technology to streamline our sales process. You know, just final point, Barry, you know, Jamie mentioned it again in a previous about forecasting. Well, we had a real challenge to forecast accurately, because obviously, you know, one day you're working with someone to sell them technology, and the next day you found out they get furloughed. It sort of screws up your ability to forecast. Again, by using the methodology and the process, the technology to have that process, you're taking out less of the guesswork. And so what that's done for us is that's allowed us and enabled us to much more accurately forecast what opportunities are going to close and when they're going to close. And that's been, during the pandemic, a massive help to our business, because it means I can go to the leadership team, the board, and say, right, this is what we think we're going to do this quarter. And this is why I think we're going to do it. And I've got the data coming from the systems to back that up, which it's been a tremendous help for us. It allows us to then carry on investing where we need to invest, which is important.
John, not all of our guests are our Deal Hub users, but I think I'm going to have to invite more of them on, because thank you for the kind words, and I appreciate it. I specifically love the word adrenaline, that since Deal Hub or any technology that helps you close sales quicker keeps that, I guess, the motivation up and keeps the spirit up. And then that also is important for a sales rep, not just to make the money, but also to get that adrenaline and to see the, I guess, that snowball effect where it starts going and then you get another one and another one, and it keeps the excitement going up. And hopefully that will also be helpful for employee retainment and excitement.
But Barry, just on it, you know, it wasn't an easy decision, right? To go and buy technology, such as Deal Hub. You know, there were those that was, do we really need that right now? You know, if I go out across the organization, stakeholders, and I ask them now, do you think that was the right decision to buy that technology? I am pretty confident sitting here right now that I would get a unanimous yes, it was the right decision. And I think, you know, anybody out there that is thinking about, you know, and struggling with, you know, some of the processes they may have, I would encourage you to just be open-minded and think about the technologies that's out there. And there's other technology as well. You know, we talk about CBQ, but there's other things out there from a customer like Chandira and other things around account management, for example, that can help account management with salespeople. But technology, it can really help streamline processes, and you get the return on investment in bucket loads. Just keep an open mind to it is what I recommend to those that are listening.
Amazing. So we'll do another one, a three-letter thing, MPT, methodology, process, technology. That's the key. fantastic. John, honestly, I think we could talk for another hour easily, and probably even a second hour, and it'd be a lot of fun. But I'm looking at the time. Our time is up. I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on and really and talking about being transparent and being honest about your management role as CRO and how that plays with your employees and your team. And I wish you best of luck and looking forward to keeping in touch. I really think you guys are going to be a rocket ship from 350 to 500 to many more employees.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, thanks for your time, Barry. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's been good to chat.
Yeah.
Sorry fun. If I talk too much.
No, it was perfect. Thank you. All right. Well, to our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll be on next week also. All right. Bye now.